is it material enough, or should they just move on? Because my concern is that that tax return is going to come due before we have everything in place, and we need an audit, and we obviously will need that tax return also to file with the state of California. And I think what we have right now is a six-month extension, but the end of June will be here before we know it. So, again,
who are you going to tell what we need to do to fix this problem or to improve it?
I would love to work with Chris and give him all the information that we have. And this is not necessarily through me. It's through George Walter. That is one of my CPAs that works on staff for NECA.
Right. I'd be happy to accommodate that for the record.
So you're saying that some people are not giving things to you, and some people were not giving things to the auditor, but you think that if we work with you, that could be remedied?
Oh, absolutely. I think the fact, quite frankly, that we are in January, that we have financials for January, to me speaks volume from how far behind we were before when we first started working with you.
How much would you expect an audit would cost if our auditors got full cooperation from us?
It would be much lower, probably. Because, first of all, as it is now, they provide us the list of items. We're going to, but sometimes we need documentation that the records, when we didn't have some of them, we had to depend on staff. Another very good example is when they need to test revenue, they need something from the membership database in order to verify that these were the dollars that came in, and then for them to be able to test, if you will.
Well, I don't quite understand that, but I guess I'll figure it out. At the time I was talking to the auditor, and this was over probably 15 years ago, I think there was an audit that cost $70,000. Can you tell me how much one of the previous audits has cost us if you had to total it for a year?
If I had to total it right now, the 2017 audit was probably every bit of that. And if I remember correctly, I'll look that up and send you an email with it.
All right. Well, if it's not any trouble, I just wondered. I'm just trying to get some grip on how much it's costing and how much we could possibly save if we got our act together. Thank you.
Well, quite frankly, even the NETA's contract, though, we're not charging you for, you know, answering questions or looking up information. That is ongoing. But I would say, when I first started working with Tom Livingston and I found out how far behind this organization was in financials, it really, that dollar amount would not be what it is now. Because, first of all, we'll have the information. And I know I said this the last time, quite frankly, if everything was in one database, that would make it would expedite everything. And I'm not asking for you to release your business managers. They can still be there. But if they could just run everything through MAS 500, and then we have access to it, we don't have to rely on them, if you will.
Well, who is not running it through MAS 500?
Well, the only stations that are on MAS is New York and D.C., and the national office. The rest are not. They're on Great Plains.
Okay. Can anybody tell me why they're doing that, other than Anita? Why we're not? Are they saying they can't be trained?
No, I mean, we could train him. That's not a problem.
Spent a lot of money creating great planes.
They did, but if they're not trained and they're not doing it the same way, then you really don't have a good product.
If I could put
I'm
something
not
in
saying
it.
That was the reason. I'm just saying that maybe that was the reason.
Art Paul for Stack?
Go ahead, Art Paul.
Yeah. Yes. Teresa brings up an issue that's been an issue for a very long time. If you look through the ancient minutes of this committee, you'll see that we've had issues going back quite a number of years, of where the auditors have demanded information and gotten zero and ignored and everything. What the interim CFO is outlining is exactly what everybody has run into. All the previous auditors, and now the auditors plus NETA, are running into the same thing. And, you know, it's not going to stop unless it gets stopped. And it costs, you know, if you look over the years, I don't know how many tens of thousands of dollars this sort of thing has cost us. So, yes, this is not new. This is a chronic condition. And, you know, I think it's a management problem. And I wish they would do something about it. That's it.
Yeah, part of the problem is that we keep switching out managers so often that nobody is holding these people to it. I mean, Bill, based upon our finance committee meeting, isn't this directly opposite of what we were told? I mean, I got the impression that, we were told we were doing it right and other people were doing it wrong. We were cooperating, but we can't say we're cooperating with Anita. But we can't say we're cooperating with Anita if she's saying we need to do it this way and we're doing it with great planes, right?
Can I answer? I think each of us at every one of our stations are being told that our staff is giving them everything they need. But that's clearly not happening, and for years it's been this way, I know. And it's not just for the audits. You know, there's financial information that's needed for other things also, other reporting. Even CPB, we're still trying to maintain qualifications for CPB, and it requires financial reports every year so that we can eventually get CPB grants again. And I know it's really hard every year to get information, and it's not just one or two stations, it's a bunch of them. Is that correct, Anita?
That's correct. And frankly, we really could help you, I think, considerably with CPB because we know the people, if you will, especially that the dollars are earmarked for, and we work currently with our other clients. That's what we do. We do all the what is known as the annual financial report and the SAS report for them, which we would do for Pacifica. But, I mean, clearly you would not be receiving the management letters as you have year after year if staff was not cooperating. I mean, was cooperating. I recently looked at the management letter, and again, auditors have been on calls, maybe not with the finance committee, but I would welcome them to talk to you directly to tell you what they are missing.
Nancy with a question.
I just wanted to comment quickly on that. I think that would be a great idea if we could get the auditors on the call at some point. So I would look forward to that conversation. Go ahead, Nancy.
I'm wondering if this would be rectified somewhat if we had some practices established at the station that we don't yet have established. I know I keep asking about how far along we are on with Netta helping us to set up systems of good accounting practices. And I know that it's in progress, but I was just wondering if that were completed, how would that rectify this problem?
We actually have a documentation. I'll send it to Chris where we have attempted to do, I mean, we did essentially you do so-and-so for this process, or you key in this as a journal entry or what have you. The problem that I see is that Great Plains, if you will, is different from Mass 500. So what we created were still some processes and procedures for them to be able, and it's actually even outlined in our contract, that what we needed to see was documentation, like a bank statement, in order for us to verify when they reconcile the bank statement. Something as simplistic as that. And sometimes, quite frankly, it's like pulling teeth to get them. So, and again, because we were supposed to provide some oversight, if you will, and that is for us to be able to see what vendors they're paying, if you will, because you never want an organization not to imply anything other than it's pretty standard. The same individual depositing money that's going to write a check to a vendor, if you will. So you want some, you know, some oversight applied to that. But I will send Chris what we have done on that.
This is James for the stack.
Thank you. Go ahead, James. We're running out of time for this item, so let's make this let's start to wrap this up, but go ahead.
Yeah, the last questioner who was inquiring about having the auditors on the call, if you go back last year into the audit committee archive, you'll find that we did have them come to the audit committee on multiple occasions, and they did explain exactly what was needed. There was a chart where it broke down what was needed, and so if you go back into the minutes and the audio from those committee meetings, and also possibly talk to Eileen Rosen, who was the chair of the audit committee, she could help you with that. That I think would be helpful. And finally, I have a question for Anita, if I may. I don't really want to get you into this, but I'm just trying to think of how to ask you this. I mean, there's a theory running around that some people who would like to, that there are some who would like the network to go bankrupt, and then some certain stations could be spun off and others could be sold. And I'm definitely not going to ask you to respond to that, but when you see people refusing to give you certain information, is there any way, you know, that a good, well, no, you're not auditors, but a good firm such as yours can get a feeling for whether people are doing these kinds of things deliberately, or whether it's just incompetence or intransigence, or, you know, perhaps they're not competent and they're covering up the fact that they're not able to do it? I mean, what do you make of a situation where you're requesting information that I think probably should be at the fingertips of the management, and they just, you know, it's, as you say, it's like pulling teeth. They don't, it doesn't come.
Frankly, we have documented where we have requested information, and I have been one of the individuals that was on site at a station, and I requested a revenue statement, if you will, from their membership database. Essentially, what I wanted to look at the revenue for the year. And they told me they didn't have it, never had it. So what we were trying to tie for the auditors was the actual cash that was deposited, if you will. But it's just things like that that are important in our accounting world, if you will. But to answer your question, a desk review would obviously do that. It would answer our questions. Within ourselves, we do discuss why someone doesn't want to share something. And many times it does imply that they either they don't want us there, obviously. They're not willing to share because we, you know, we're accountants. We do that for a living. We feel that you know, they're either hiding something or they're just not. I don't know. Maybe it's the intellect. I don't want to say anything.
I don't want you to go too far out on the limb, but thank you for that. Thank you for an honest answer. Thank you.
Anita, I just have one quick point of clarification. What did you say, desk review?
Desk review, yes.
What is that? What is that? I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with that term.
That's right. That is where we could go on site and essentially be able to review all the records. For bank, as an example, bank statements that we don't have access to make sure that all the bank statements that are on the balance sheet is, in fact, all that they have. You would also test revenue. You would test expenses. You would look through your vendor invoices. It's actually like a process, if you will. But we have to be allowed in, if you will, and for them to allow us to be able to look at that. And I think one thing that obviously would stand out, element of surprise has a lot to do with it. If we went on site and when we got there, there was a lot of money that wasn't deposited, bank statements that were not reconciled, bills that were not paid. And that is called a desk review.
Okay, thank you for that. I appreciate that.
Sure. Sure.
All right, Anita, thank you very, very much. That was an interesting conversation. It kind of took a different turn than I was expecting, but I think it was a very helpful one, both to the committee and to the listeners. So I appreciate that very much. Thank you.
Sure. Bill, was there a question for Anita?
Sure, Bill. We need to wrap this up, though, so make it quick, please.
Okay, just based on what you just said, so which stations do you not have access to the bank accounts? Because the PNB was told a few weeks ago that NIDA had access to all of them except KPFAs, and then we passed a motion to change that. So supposedly you should have at least viewing access to all the accounts. Is that working or not?
And that's all that we need, quite frankly, is just viewing, being able to log in to view the bank statement. Just wanted to clear that up. I don't think we have them all, but I will get you a list for those that we don't have.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Anita. All right,
and
thank you very much for your participation. I know that you're under a bit of duress right now, so I appreciate you being here. Thank you.
Thank you, absolutely. I'm going to hang up if that's all right. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Anita.
Thanks a lot.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So that brings us around to item 8. I just sent out a spreadsheet, and it's pretty simple, but I just wanted to start the discussion again on the central services formula. I took Anita's number rather than my inflated number and ran it through, 1.5 million. I think that that's a generous allotment for central services, given the revenue generating capability of the national office, it runs about 750,000 per year. What I did is I just broke it down the same exact way that we broke down the interest, which was by membership. There's, of course, 1,000 ways of doing this breakdown. But I figured that since we decided that dividing the interest worked on the basis of membership, that maybe we could fold all of those members into central services. This is, of course, part of a broader discussion, and I fully anticipate that we're going to have to hold this some of this discussion over until the next meeting, because there's a lot of stuff to think about here, and I don't want it to hit you like a train wreck. I'm not expecting anybody to draw any conclusions about what the best way to do this is, but I am hoping for some feedback tonight. And I'd like to take a stack for this one and just see what everybody thinks of that idea, and if they don't like it, what they would offer as an alternative. So if anybody would like to comment.
Bill.
Our Paul.
Okay. Okay. Bill, then Art Paul.
Well, one piece of information that's critical that we need to know for this and also for budgeting is how are the stations doing, each one of them doing on central services now? Because if they're not able to pay all the central services now and we're asking them to pay more, that's not a realistic expectation. And we need to make sure we have some way of knowing for sure we can get money to pay the interest, at least the interest on the loan.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Bill. Or Paul?
Okay. Looking at this, which you've just sent out, this is the Pacifica Interest and Central Services spreadsheet you just sent? That's the name
of it? That's the one.
Okay.
That's it.
Okay. So what is – okay, you have on line two the names of the stations and a checksum, and then you have line three, even. What's even?
Sorry, where is that? Okay. So this was – okay, so this was various, those were various scenarios that were developed for, we discussed, this was part of the interest discussions. This is the same, spreadsheet that I used for the interest formulas. And, so the even line is just breaking it down by station. So every station pays 20%. Membership is based on membership. Revenue is based on revenues. CS formula is based on the previous CS formula that is like 5 years old now, at least, I think. It's really old. And then the Tamara line was Tamara's suggestion for breaking it down. So those were the five options we had. We ended up deciding on the membership line, which is row four. And so membership is then carried down to line 10. And then I use that as the basis for all the remaining calculations that are below.
I see. Okay. All right. Yeah, that looks – I know for the BAI one, the payment looks about what I had previously calculated. So, yeah. Regarding central services, we also have to since we really should be realistic about a lot of things, one thing we need to understand is that for BAI – at least my knowledge, we are still using the thing of BAI is every time it sends in money for central services, it's still backfilling instead of anything current. So while, you know, people can argue about whether the backfilling part should happen or not, we need to look at what BAI is recently actually sending in wherever it gets applied, and see that as what WBAI really is throwing in central services. I know some people like to say BAI hasn't paid central services in a million years, but that's because it's doing the backfilling. But for accounting purposes, to see what we can do, we should really pay attention to what dollar amount have you sent us lately, and go by that. Thank you.
I agree with that, Liverpool. Thank you. Any more feedback, questions, comments?
Teresa, comment.
Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Go ahead. Mm-hmm. Yep.
We talked a little bit earlier, and let me admit this. I have been distracted numerous times during this call from incoming calls and another project I'm working on. But a little earlier we talked about many, many expenses that the national was paying, like union negotiations. If the national, I remember one time, I guess about 20 years ago or so, their national office had legal fees for people that sued, and there was one tiny amount. It was under $8,000 compared to all the others for KPFT because Ray Hill had said something on air and this woman, filed for slander or something like that. So I guess we settled it for $8,000 or something like that. But there was some accountability that each station had to have for expenses that they generated because management was lax or whatever. And I'm wondering, in that long list of things that Anita mentioned that she had to pay, is there any accountability to the stations to pay that rather than just saying, okay, well, National's going to pay that?
I think the short answer to your question is no. But then the next question that would crop up in my mind is how the decisions are actually being made. And I don't know the answer to that question either, candidly. I'll type up an email to Anita, because this has been puzzling me for a little bit here, and especially after tonight's call when she brought it up again when I asked about the legal and professional expenses. It's like, oh, okay, how were those decisions made? Because I really honestly don't know. I think a lot of these discussions come down to the point that Bill made earlier about ability to pay. And if a station is not gainfully operating, its ability to pay is nil. It doesn't have an ability to pay.
Not only that, but somebody could bill us. And this is the question that we had in 2002. We had these bills, and Lonnie Hicks, our CFO, actually had to negotiate. I'll give you $0.10 on the dollar. That's all we've got. You know, he had to negotiate that. And I'm wondering if some of these things we maybe need to question the bills. And I'm wondering if a station runs up a bill like that and thinks, oh, well, National can pay it, then there's no incentive for anybody to say, well, you know, I think they padded the bill.
That's a very good point.
Just a thought.
Thank you. Anyone else? So what I want to do with this is just continue this item on the next meeting, because obviously there's a lot here to think about and to discuss. But we do need to come up with a new central services formula that's more reflective of what's actually happening out there at the individual stations. So this is what I offer as a starting point. I don't by any means want you to treat this as an ending point. It's just a place to start the discussion. So I appreciate the feedback that we got tonight, and I just hope that we can continue working on this until we come up with some sort of a equitable solution for all the stations. Yes, Bill.
Yeah, and just going back and comparing, looking at the profit and loss statement, you know, for FY19, the total operating expenses for the P&O for the national office is $1.996 million. Now, I'm not sure if that's what we should expect for this fiscal year, but if it is, that means we need about $2 million and not what is on that spreadsheet you just had, which was, what was it, $1.5 million total central services?
Right. I can address that. I can address that. So,
and then in addition, last year we didn't have to come up with interest payments on the big loan for most of the year because we had prepaid that using funds from selling the national office. And so we're going to have more expense for the national office in FY20 because of that. So that makes me think that it's that cell G13 on your spreadsheet you just sent out, which was the total CS payments needed. It's probably too low.
Okay, I can address that.
It means we're going to need. Okay.
I mentioned this earlier,
Nancy,
but
Nancy, I have. Nancy? I would like to address something that Bill just said. He said that we had to sell the national office to do this. Actually, the sale of the national office building was to pay a surprise cost that Empire State saddled us with to leave Empire State. We got the interest was paid out of the loan for the last year.
Yeah, my understanding is
not by selling the national office.
Okay, my understanding is that the sale of the national office was used to pay off the small loan, the friendly loan. But
Which
I think
is,
we're getting.
Yeah, but that was
go ahead.
that was needed to address an additional cost that Empire State saddled us with that we weren't expecting. It was like around $400,000.
Okay. Thanks, Nancy. But let me circle back to Bill's question. So the reason that I think that that number is probably okay, Bill, is that the national office actually has some revenue generating capability itself that's in excess of the difference between that $1.5 million and the $2.0 million in expenses that you're looking at. If you look at line 16 of the big spreadsheet, for the first quarter, you'll see that in 2018 fiscal year, it raised $732,000. And then it was actually $1.2 million due to some major donor funding. And so far this year, it's $165,000. So there is some offsetting there. That's in excess of that $500,000 over the course of a year. So I think it's still okay. The real problem is the shortfalls and underpayments. And that goes back to our Paul's earlier comment about, you know, what the national office is actually getting on a continuing basis. And, I will dig around and figure that out because, it isn't clear from the financial statements.
Okay, and we need $75,000 a quarter, approximately, for interest on the big loan.
I think it's a little bit under 70, actually, because the interest has come down slightly, and so is the principal.
Okay.
But I'm not going to tip it from that.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Anyone else? We're down to 4 minutes.
Chris, this is James.
Go ahead, James.
Bill just mentioned the P&Ls, and I realize we're not on that topic at the moment, but I know that you're gathering a lot of information as you work on the P&Ls, and then sometimes we don't get it early enough for at least some of us to review it before we get to the committee meeting. Is it possible for you to send us the raw material that you're working on with those P&Ls so that the rest of us can go through it as well and possibly even help you? To figure out what you're, you know, help you do what you're doing?
Sure. I think the only problem that I have with that particularly is that these documents end up getting leaked out to the general public. And somebody must have access, I've asked our Paul about this before, to the listserv or something, or somebody's forwarding the information. And it ends up in the hands of people that, you know, are not part of this committee, are not part of the PMB. Some of them don't even serve on LSBs. And
really?
Yep. And so I'm deeply concerned about these things circulating around before they've been reviewed. But I suppose that if I forward it to each of you individually, it might alleviate that problem. But that's the thing, you know, and I understand that there's been there's some hard feelings about this, and I hear it. You know, I get it a lot, actually. It's pretty much a continuing stream of grievances about this particular issue. But
Which issue is that, the leaking or the?
No, the slowness of the financial report.
Well, I didn't mean to imply any criticism along those lines at all.
I understand that, James. I understand that. But if I'm sounding defensive, I apologize for that as well. But the reason for this is that, you know, there's been financial reporting that I've considered to be somewhat premature that's gotten out there and done a lot of damage. And, you know, I think it's partially responsible for what happened on October 7th. So the people that are being most demanding about this are the people that should be most sensitive about it. And I just want to avoid that. I really do. I want to avoid this stuff becoming weaponized to be used to make decisions that probably wouldn't have survived a proper review. And how long is a proper review? I don't know. I really don't. I'm cranking along on it and doing the best I can. It takes me about a week or two to kind of digest all this stuff, but it's getting quicker because I'm looking at the same format all the time now. You know, it's easier to say, okay, yeah, I know that that's okay. I know that that's okay. I know that that's okay. I don't have to go through line by line and number by number anymore. It isn't like that. It's more like, oh, wow, that development number is way out of whack. Why is that? And then you start digging around the development number. Oh, there's, you know, line 73 of the spreadsheet. Something's bad about that. And then I shoot off Anita a question. I say, what's up with this? And if she can answer it, that's great. And if she can't answer it, then we move it to another category or, figure out what the heck is going on. So I have some sort of an explanation to provide, and I can at least make a footnote about this stuff. So that when it gets out there and starts circulating, there's an explanation for it.
May I speak for a moment? I appreciate what you're saying, and I kind of envision being on the finance committee that what you're describing that you're doing is kind of what we should all be doing, not necessarily all talking to Anita, because that would raise our costs and, you know, overburden her. But, you know, unless this information is proprietary or somehow needs to be protected. I realize the reason that you want to protect it, and I appreciate that. I'm just wondering if there's some way as a committee we could dig more into that. I mean, I would like to be getting good at this too, and I feel like sometimes when I just come to the committee and I get the numbers, you know, a short time before the meeting, I don't really, I'm not really getting into it. I'm not drilling down into it the way I feel like I should.
I understand that, yeah. I maybe what would help is if and I don't think this would take much effort on Anita's part, if I could have her break these reports down by station, that would alleviate a lot of it. In that, you know, if the reports were sent out station by station, then the individual stations would have their operating numbers and they could figure out if there were any problems with them. And they're friendly to their own station, so there wouldn't be any any of this sort of adversarial crosstalk that takes place on the listservs about what other stations are doing. That might be a possible solution, is to break it down station by station. Part of it is that there's so much information on these reports that, you know, and people are right to ask questions. I have no idea what's going on at PFW. I mean, that thing about that was brought up tonight about the government layoffs last year. It wouldn't have even occurred to me. I didn't even think of it, you know, but that's very illuminating. And, if I had sent that report out to WPFW, they could have commented on that immediately and it would have helped me, understand what I'm looking at. So I think there's a lot of merit in what you're saying. I'm just trying to figure out a way to do it where stations aren't beating the crap out of each other on listservs. Over this financial data.
I get that.
And so anyway, I like the idea of involving everybody more, because it's impossible for me to know the particulars about what's happening in every station. It's impossible for Anita to know that, honestly. But it's easy for you guys because you're feet on the ground. So I see a lot of merit to that idea.
Well, perhaps we could put that on the agenda for next time as something to, you know, come up with some solid
Fred,
ideas.
Fred here. Could I jump in also?
Okay. Sure. Can I move to extend this meeting for an extra 15 minutes? We're already over time. Can we go to 10:30? Is that okay with everybody?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Let's go to 10:30. Go ahead. Was it Fred and R. Paul?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead, Fred.
I was going to say, last night when I got the spreadsheet, KPFK already got the spreadsheet from our business manager 2 weeks ago on, I believe, February 7th. We got just the KPFK December P&L, and I was comparing that to the consolidated from NIDA, and it was exactly the same.
Okay. That's great to know.
And, because NIDA uses we use Great Plains at KPFK, our business manager does, and they transfer that information, NIDA does, to, their system. So, the numbers should be the same. But, this the function of the National Finance Committee is really a group effort to go over these numbers. There's a lot of expertise here with all the treasurers. We have expertise on each of our own stations. So if we go over these things, you know, when they come out, we can you know, alert you to problem areas, errors that we find, and so forth, and maybe shorten this process of getting this stuff, you know, getting it out. I'm hoping that I can, now that we've discussed, you know, the P&L that came out, that you sent out last night, I can send this out to my local finance committee for them to see. So.
Yes. Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
I'm pretty confident about that P&L at this juncture. Yeah. Yeah.
But holding it back from us is, I think, is doing us more harm, is doing Pacifica more harm than, you know, the damage that's been done, you know, by not, you know, delaying the distribution.
Okay.
That's my two cents. That's my
clear,
two cents.
Okay, no, I appreciate that, Fred. And let me just be clear. I don't have any problem sending it out to the committee. I'm just reluctant to send it out over the listserv because it ends up in the hands of people that have nothing to do with this committee. And so, you know, I've already expressed that, but I just wanted to let everybody on this call know that it isn't you guys in particular that I'm worried about here. I'm worried about this stuff getting politicized by people that are either not on this committee or not, and not even part of the formal organization, not directors at all. You know, they have a stake, obviously, or they wouldn't be messing around with this stuff. But I'm uncertain what that stake is, and I just see a lot of stuff on the listservs that's just absolutely wrong. And, you know, it's misinterpretations of the data. A lot of the data is preliminary. And I think it just ends up causing a lot of discussion that is, you know, damaging to the organization because, people speculate about, why things look the way they do because they don't understand it, you know, and they don't bother trying really. They just express their opinions about why they think things are the way they are without doing any analysis. And I expect more of the people on this committee. I really do. And I trust you guys, to do a good job. So that isn't really the issue. I'm not holding it back from you. In other words, it's more that I just don't want it out there in the hands of people that have no knowledge, no expertise, and don't care candidly about what the actual facts are. So that's been my grievance for the last 6 months, and I apologize for trying to control that in the only way that I could think of. But yeah, and I appreciate your feedback and input on how we can get around that problem. So I hope we can fashion a solution to that because I really would like to share more with you guys because you know. Okay?
Bill, for the stack.
Yeah, go ahead, Bill.
Wait a minute.
Yeah,
was
I agree,
I on stack?
No, our Paul. I'm sorry.
Oh, right.
You were next. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, our
okay.
Paul.
Chris, if you're not sending it to us, you are pulling it back from us. I mean, you know, restricted distribution of information is a well-known thing, and it has its effects. I think transparency would help. There's a bit of logic we have to address here. You're talking about when you send it to the list, it's going all over the place. Well, I sent you the list, the very short list, of who's on the NFC mailing list, and the NFC mailing list is the members of the list, which is the two people from each station and the ICFO, and the other person that's on here is whoever happens to be the executive director at the moment, and that's it. So if you're sending stuff out and you think it's going to really go bad places, sending it to each of us individually will be the same list, except, I suppose, for the executive director. I mean, if you want, the committee can vote to remove the executive director from the mailing list. That's a way to do it, I suppose, but if we can't trust the executive director, we're screwed anyway. And, yes, I think that people will misuse stuff if they can, but if it's leaking out of one of the 12 email addresses that you're sending it to, then that's a conscious decision somebody is making. And there isn't much we can do about that, because whatever you send out is going to be put out. As for something else Fred said, so are you saying that the P&L you've put out tonight is something we can send out to people?
I feel pretty comfortable with it, yes.
All right. Understand that when I send it to the the WBII Local Finance Committee has an open list, so you'll be freaked out if somebody then posts it, you know, to wherever that you don't like, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of past the freak out point now, R. Paul, candidly.
Okay.
But the other thing is that as time goes on, you know, and I work more with Netta, I develop more and more confidence about the numbers that are coming out of there. You know, I track down whatever miscategorizations. That's the highest source of error. And it's reasonably easy to find this stuff and to track it down. You know, like, for example, I'll just give you one quick example. There was a there was an accusation that WBAI's rent was getting keystoned, that, you know, instead of paying $5,300 a month, you guys were paying the books were showing $10,600 a month. That wasn't the case at all. That wasn't what it was. It was that the transmitter lease rent ended up on the office rent category. It was miscategorized.
No, that wasn't it. What it was there were 2 months in a row. It's $5,300 was the studio rental, and 2 months in a row got put in, and that made $10,600. The transmitter is more than $14 a month. So
I understand that. I understand that, R. Paul. But the transmitter rent did end up in that rent category. And it wasn't just that 2 months rent showed up at the same time. When we backed out the transmitter numbers, the numbers for the rent agreed perfectly. So there were 3 months of transmitter rent in there, I think, or something like that. It wasn't exactly twice. That was actually the tip off that something else was at play, that it wasn't just some sort of accident of accounting. But this was the accusation. I got it from several people, and it just turned out to be flatly wrong. It was just a miscategorization. It was easy to track down, and it was easy to correct, but it didn't affect the overall balance of the station, is the other thing that people need to understand. You know, it wasn't that somebody was maliciously driving up the cost for WBAI to make them look bad. It was just a matter of getting things in the right on the right line in the spreadsheet. It was a data entry problem, essentially. So, you know, this is the sort of thing that I'm talking about here. Is I'm just giving it as an example because, you know, I got Netta got accused of this. It circulated back through me. I heard it from several different people. You know, I looked at it, and it was something relatively simple and easy to fix, and it got fixed. But that's the kind of error that that's easy to track down for an individual station because they know what they're paying. You know, so I agree with James that if these numbers were being circulated to individual stations, you guys could track down these errors just as easily as I can.
Faster. Was an NETA thing that was for FY18 that was way off. We won't get into that detail. But so the bottom line is, yes, I can send this P&L to the mailing list for the local finance committee, which includes a lot of people.
Yeah, I'll prepare for the blowback, but I think that actually it spells this stuff out pretty clearly. So I feel comfortable backing it up. That's the main thing. You know, at this point, I feel like it can be defended. Those numbers can be defended. So, just quickly, if we could just move on because we only have 2 minutes left. If I can quickly move on to the property tax issue. I don't have much to say on the call about this, other than the fact that all the paperwork has been submitted, the lawyers are working on it, and they're reasonably confident that this is going to reach an equitable conclusion and that we'll get the exemption that we're seeking that's been not in place for a long, long time now. If we want to come back to this at the next meeting, I'm fine with that. I'm sure there'll be further updates at that time. but that's about all I've got right now. It was a lot of effort to get all of that paperwork together. There was a lot of data that the lawyers wanted to see, a lot of paperwork, a lot of backup and supporting documents. All that stuff got taken care of, I believe, on Friday and Saturday, the 14th and 15th. So that stuff is in the works, and hopefully, you know, knock on wood, we'll reach an equitable solution to that issue.
Chris, does that include the way back years?
Yeah,
six, seven, five, six, 7 years ago?
It includes the way back years, although, you know, this is stuff that's ultimately going to have to be negotiated with the county tax collector. My understanding is that we have somebody friendly in that office, and that's good. That's great, actually. So hopefully it'll be resolved as much in our favor as it possibly can within the confines of the law.
Great, thanks.
Sure. I'd take questions on it, but we're out of time, unfortunately, unless somebody wants to extend.
Bill, can we extend 5 minutes?
I have no problem with that.
Bring up.
Anybody else have any objection to that motion?
A what
okay.
For further discussion on this item?
What's that?
It's on the P&L.
What?
Go ahead, Bill.
And P&L and Central Services. Yeah.
Okay.
I just think, for your list of what to ask Tamara for, I know she's busy, but I'm glad she's catching up.
Yes. Nobody objected, so, yeah.
We need some cash flow information about Central Services, not just for the last few months, but for all of 2019, because it's critical for projecting if we're going to be able to make those interest payments or not, and also to figure out how we can, if we need to readjust Central Services formulas or that sort of thing. The P&L does not show cash flow. I'll remind everybody.
No,
it only shows
no,
what we're supposed to be paying. And so
that's
the Central Services show, they should show what's the formula, not what's actually paid. And and this has been a problem for years, and this is why, frankly, this is the main reason why we got behind on audits and all this other stuff. We owe money to our auditors and to NEDA and to other service providers because we don't have enough Central Services funds. And we need to be honest with ourselves about how much money we're getting, how much we owe them, or we're never going to get the audits caught up. And
no,
we're not going to be able to pay interest on the big loan. So it's really critical that we know honestly what each station is able to pay on that. And if there's any other interstation or interdivision transfers, we need to know about that too, because it's all going to affect the ability to pay off the interest on that loan.
Okay. I hear you, Bill, and I'll talk to Anita about developing some sort of a schedule of payments that covers that, so that we can see that more clearly. Sure. Alan? Teresa?
Chris?
Hello?
It's Fred. I had a question.
Oh, it's Fred?
Yeah, I had a question going back to the Central Services discussion, that spreadsheet you sent out. The revenue numbers on that, was that net revenue for the stations or listener income for the stations?
Actually, the spreadsheet that I sent out for the Central Services formula was strictly based on on membership.
Well, you had a line there on revenue. You were comparing four different formulas for Central Services. One was based on membership, one was based on revenue. I think you had the current formula.
Right. So the top lines 3 through 7 were the suggested ways of breaking up the interest payments. And if you're asking about the revenue numbers, let me see if I can scroll. We can scroll over it. Yeah, I can't remember what period I used for that right now, because that was abandoned at the end of our discussion for the interest formula. That's a revenue breakdown, but I'm not sure for which period. It might have been based on the projected revenue. So I should go back. I'll go back and revise that based on the 9/30 report for last year and update that row.
Yeah. Basically, I just wanted to argue that I think the fairest way to divide the central services is based on actual revenue to the stations, because that's really how they can pay. That tells you.
Okay, there's been an argument against that, and the argument is that it should be based on listener support. And the reason is that bequests are a wild card for stations, and it's unfair to assess that as an ability to pay, because it's not a continuing source of revenue for each individual station. So the suggestion was made that we back that out to listener support numbers, and that is definitely not reflected in this spreadsheet. I use total revenue for that. But those figures are distorted slightly by these extraordinary events that have taken place over the last couple of years. So, I think everybody pretty much agreed that, listener, support would be a better number to use in that revenue column if we were to do it that way.
Mark Paul, didn't we pass a motion on that? I mean,
we did. Yes,
so
the motion's passed, but the interest formula's done, and the station should be getting bills for that at this juncture. Yeah, but this isn't that wasn't for central services. That was just for the interest portion. Was that confusing, or
nope.
Does everybody understand?
No. I understand.
Okay. Okay. All right. So we're past time again. If there are no further questions, no further burning questions, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
Actually,
I move that we adjourn, Alan.
Our Paul. Sorry. Our Paul.
No, I'm just saying we've hit our time. Unless there's a motion
we
just announced we're adjourned.
Yeah, we are adjourned. Thank you very much, everyone. That was a very fruitful meeting. I appreciate it. Thanks for everybody's input.
Good night.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
Good night.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris.
Good night.